Good to have you along for the ride today on Wisconsin Public Radio. For the next 52 and a half minutes, we're going to travel Western Wisconsin arts and culture on Spectrum West. Today we'll look back a bit and then look ahead to the final season of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center with a performance venue known as the State Theater. Director Ben Richgruber is here. Jim Oliver has a look at what's on stages all over the region and will also share some dialogue with Ann Sessions about a new season from the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. This Saturday, we can treat ourselves to the Eau Claire Dance Festival Act 1, the brainchild of Emily Emerson, who visited the other day with all the inspiration and details we could hope for. We'll hear about a collaboration between the United States and Russia. Yes, it does happen. In places like Menominee, Wisconsin. Jennifer Astwood of the UW Stout School of Art and Design drives home the specifics of that. And let's begin right here. Last week, we talked with UW Eau Claire astronomy professor Paul Thomas about what was about to happen, the solar eclipse. He saw one years ago as a 16-year-old from a mountaintop in his native Australia. And this week, we caught him at the Kansas City Airport the day after the big show for a brief recollection of what he had witnessed. The anxiety that I felt was as much for you as it was for what was happening around me. Because we had clouds in Eau Claire, and I wasn't in Eau Claire, I was about 20 miles away. It was cloudy all morning, and when it became eclipse time, the sun came out. And it seemed as if it went kind of that way where you were.
Absolutely. In the Kansas City area, we had two major thunderstorms, torrential rain with flood alerts. The first one occurred just ahead of the eclipse itself. The big issue for us was whether to go to St. Joseph, which is where all the astronomers and people from all around the world had gathered. It was right on the center line of the eclipse, or to stay in the hotel where we had booked, which was right on the edge of the path. It was in Independence, part of Kansas City now. And they're far enough apart, you know, about an hour's drive, that they could get different weather. And we actually went to and fro, even physically. Right at the end, we decided to give up on Independence, where there was this torrential rain drive to St. Joseph. And we got so spooked by the traffic on the road and the rain and the visibility that we just turned back. And at that point, we almost gave up. And then, you know, I was just sitting in my hotel room and the sun came through the windows. And my wife, who was shopping, texted me and said, "Look at that." And so we went out to the back of the hotel, and there were rain clouds on the horizon, but they never approached. And we got just a beautiful view of the total eclipse all the way through all of its phases.
So how cool is that? I mean,
it's really cool. And of course, across the U.S., you know, there was just enormous amounts of people seeing it everywhere. Katie Coleman, the retired NASA astronaut who spent 6 months up on the International Space Station, took a picture from whatever airport she was at, showing people excitedly talking about it. And she said, "That's the eclipse for you, just bringing perfect strangers together to talk about it." And it was great.
Were you able to pull off what you wanted to pull off? In other words, just enjoy it without having to have a bunch of paraphernalia around you?
Yeah, I was taking a few pictures with my phone, which irritated my wife no end. She said, "You said you wouldn't do this." But yeah, it was great. And then, of course, totality itself. And you look up and you see this incredibly complicated corona, which a lot of pictures don't capture. They concentrate on the brighter inner corona. Mm-hmm. We saw Venus, we saw Procyon, and a couple of other of the wintertime stars in the daylight sky now, but they came out as the sky darkened, of course.
Wow.
And as a friend of mine said, you know, during the totality, it's like there's a sunset on every horizon. The entire sky is reddish because you're looking beyond the eclipse track
to areas
that are still lit.
So all in all, you're happy you made the trip.
Yeah, I really am. It was amazing. I think next time I wanted a desert so I don't have to second-guess things, you know, 3 or 4 hours ahead.
I'm guessing this will go into your astronomical scrapbook as one of your good days.
You know, it's one of these great intersections, Al, of the joy that everyone who's interested in astronomy feels combined with an event that's just so overwhelming. You don't have to point out that it's an exciting thing to see. It's just astonishing.
Was it emotional for you? Did you feel emotional?
Yes, very much so. And it was great to see my wife see it for the first time. I kept asking, "How does it look to you? How does it look to you?" So, yes, extremely emotional. It's the intersection of intellect and emotion that makes it just a spellbinding event.
Wine being followed by a moon shadow. Leaping and hopping on a moon.
Dr. Paul Thomas, fun stuff. Coming up, we'll look at the State Theater's final season. The Theater Guild season will be there, and Jim Oliver's guest tells us when. A new dance festival, and more.
If I ever lose my hands away.
But first, Jennifer Astwood is an associate professor in the School of Art and Design at UW-Stout. She collaborated this summer, and will again, with some educators from Russia on projects having to do with reflective sensory devices and fabrication of wearable designs. Now, without getting too technical about the actual work, we found the cooperation itself very fascinating. We caught up with Jennifer driving somewhere in the vicinity of Atlanta, Georgia, no less. Well, this feels kind of like icing on the cake. First of all, you sign up to teach young people, which is pretty cool in itself. And then along comes this opportunity to collaborate with other educators from halfway around the globe. This really is what education is all about. It's about educating the human race, not just individual countries. Does it feel all that?
It does. You know, in the last 10 years, just teaching my own students to being and taught by other colleagues from around the world to seeing how they solve a problem and how they utilize technology. It's been pretty phenomenal. And exposing not only my students, but their students about our different ways of solving a problem is pretty awesome as well.
Yeah, talk about the aesthetic side of working with people from another country, especially one that's getting a little bit of negative press in the news lately. This seems to be a pretty successful attempt at diplomacy, maybe even better diplomacy than our politicians are pulling off.
Well, I would say we all have misperceptions of different cultures, especially now, like how we perceive Russians or how they perceive Americans. When we started this collaboration, which I started about a year ago, I would just ask them questions just because I grew up in a Cold War era before the Berlin Wall came down. I just had these misperceptions, and they did too. So they would ask me, is this really how Americans act, or is this really how Russians speak of Americans? So it was about those different types of perceptions. And I had another colleague who worked with our Russian colleagues, and all he told me about the experience before I started working with him is, you're going to love it. It's going to be amazing. So I didn't have any preconceived notions that it was going to be a bad experience. I knew it was going to be a pretty phenomenal experience. But one thing that they asked me was, why are all American movies perceive Russians as either spies or villains? And I just didn't realize, that's still our perception, or a lot of that. So for me, working with them and talking to my students, it's about getting them excited about a different culture and how they problem solve things, and also just to blow through some of those misconceptions we have as a society. And I talk about that. I talk about these political and cultural challenges that we have today. They're pretty much eliminated when you have the goal of making a project.
Let's define that project. Can you give us a nutshell description of what it was you were or are working on?
Sure. So in the last couple of years, we focused on just incorporating technology, making seamless in terms of product design. Right now, our focus is on the ability to be being seen and empowering a person. It's empowering a pedestrian to be seen in low-light conditions. If they're walking on the street, or they're walking on the road, or they're riding a bike, and also just to make technology seamless. So instead of them having to push a button, turn on a light, if a car or another person comes closer to them, the technology will just suddenly work, whereas the light will be more illuminated or more easily to be seen without having to think about it. Technology does it for them. And this is what technology is doing for us in society now. We live in this most exciting time.
Yeah.
I personally think, even driving right now through Georgia, my phone will tell me if there's a faster route that I can take.
And you're talking to me, doing an interview at the same time. Go figure. So now your Russian counterparts, was all of what you just described talked about and decided on before they got here?
We knew we were going to focus on technology. I'm going back to Russia in November to teach a two-week workshop. When I was asked to come back, I was trying to think of a way to update the project we always need lighting, right? That's something that is yep. always a need, but yes. also just changing the context. So we're focusing on just wearable design being seen.
Okay.
So what they're going to be exposed to when I go to Russia is the total industrial design process on establishing what problems are out there just by interviewing people and observing how people utilize technology and being seen. And then on other parts of our process is ideation development, so that's sketching what's in our heads on paper and then turning those sketches into models. So we'll be learning how to create low-fidelity prototypes. Their program over there is a master's in digital fabrication.
Mm-hmm.
They already are pretty apt at using digital fabrication tools like 3D printers and laser engravers. So they are just going to be picking back off that knowledge and applying that to the project. Their problem into a solution.
As most of you can tell, we're on a telephone call with Jennifer Astwood. She is Associate Professor, School of Art and Design at UW-Stout, of course in Menominee, Wisconsin. We're talking about a Russian collaboration that she had this summer for a couple weeks and that will continue. It's a wonderful story. Now, Jennifer, you had only 2 weeks with your Russian guests. The typical day must have been pretty full. You didn't have too much time to waste.
Yes. Did focus on an additional requirement in addition to focusing on wearable design.
Mm-hmm.
And we focused on a manufacturing process specifically that in low-run production. We focused on slip casting, which is utilizing ceramics and creating molds out of parts and using digital fabrication to utilize that production process. So our mornings would start with me teaching this process and then developing these projects, utilizing that manufacturing process, and then the afternoon would focus on one part of the design process in which I spoke earlier. You know, the research, the ideation, development, or digital fabrication.
You, of course, from UW-Stout, your two guests from the National University of Science and Technology in Moscow. As you work together, what little nuances, if any, did you find in comparing our two systems of education? Do you find that no matter who it is, that education is education and that it usually meshes well, or did you have to make some adjustments, or how did that all go?
What I learned is that anyone can learn design. One of them was an industrial designer, and one of them focused on software.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm in heavy traffic right now. Yes, we learned. We are pretty similar. Design is design, and education is education. So with that, we have different ways to solve the problem. And another thing that is different, you know this term, Minnesota nice. Well, I think people from Wisconsin, we have a tendency to be Minnesota nice. I don't know if there's another Wisconsin term for it. So sometimes we have a tendency to beat around the bush, and we're not always in critical feedback mode. But since we had 2 weeks and we had such a short time period, we had to bounce our concepts off each other. We had to give critical feedback, in-depth feedback to each other. And I found that we really challenged our concepts and what we developed and what we created. And that's pretty phenomenal just to learn and grow. And plus, it's also really exciting just to make things with other people in terms of education. We are similar, but we are different in terms of how we solve the problem.
You know, I have to think, too, as an educator at UW-Stout, it must raise your level of pride in the clout that UW-Stout has, even internationally, with an ability to attract attention from foreign collaborators. Does it make you feel good about where you are?
Yes. This will be my 10th year working at Stout, and where I started, like, I knew that digital fabrication was the way of the future, but to be actually really incorporating that and just, like, what tools that we utilize, and then also seeing how digital fabrication is utilized in this global context,
mm-hmm.
I never thought I was going to be working with Russian colleagues 10 years ago.
Sure.
So it's really surpassed my expectations, but it also really exposes our students to how to solve problems in a global context and to see how our Russian counterparts can solve problems. I'm going back to Russia in November to teach this wearable design project, but my goal is to take students there next summer to teach a class on digital fabrication, but work inside their fabrication laboratory and work with their students.
You know, we keep talking about global in everything nowadays, so it's important for students to have, you know, an idea of what global means to their education. What they're learning is what people are learning all over, especially in the technological sides of things. Hey,
yeah,
way to go. Thanks so much for being with us. I hope you drive safely and that you'll keep us posted here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Jennifer Astwood, UW Stout. More impressive stuff from Menominee, Wisconsin. Ahead on Spectrum West, a young lady who loves to dance dedicates a Saturday festival to it, a new Theater Guild season, and the State Theater takes a curtain call. Support for WPR comes from Bicycle Lacrosse, announcing Bike Fest, September 1st through the 4th. More than a dozen scheduled rides from bluff tops to neighborhoods with live music, food, and more. Details at bicyclelacrosse.com. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering free trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. Simply-dunn.com. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Saturday marks a day when dance takes another step forward into its rightful place in the ranks of what we think of as the arts. Sometimes we sidestep the notion simply because less events feature dance than visual art or music, for instance. Well, Emily Emerson is out to change that with Act One of the Eau Claire Dance Festival. She's a young lady who hasn't been in love with dancing all that long. 13 years is not a lifetime, but dance must have become part of your life quickly and completely. Tell me how you were introduced to it.
Apparently, when I was really little, I was just dancing all the time. You know, when I was 3-4 years old, it was my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
But I didn't enter any organized sort of dance until I was 8. And then I just did it for fun, like most kids do most sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then come high school, it really kind of took over my life. I was on high school dance team. I was dancing at a local studio that has actually continued to be really supportive of this endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college, I just once again couldn't quite let go of it. And it became one of my majors.
So you said when you were young, you did it for fun.
Yeah.
How does a person suddenly then take dance seriously? What happens when you take it seriously?
Well, I'd argue that it's still fun.
Sure, but I want to do this more seriously than just around the house.
Lessons, for sure, are a great way to start with that, but also the degree to which you think about it, I would say.
Okay.
When I did it for fun, I was just kind of bopping around, doing my own thing, instead of studying it and thinking about it on a more cerebral level.
And we're going to get into the kinds of dance that are available out there and the kind of dance presented at the festival. Because where I come from, dances all had names. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I actually took dancing lessons when I was in about, I'm thinking, sixth grade. My parents said, you know, all of you kids are going to take dancing lessons because eventually you're going to have to shuck and jive with the girls, and you're going to have to learn things like the foxtrot and the waltz, and they all had names. I think you're right in thinking that dance was taking a bit of a back seat as the arts continue to emerge in Eau Claire and the Chippewa Valley, and Act One is only the beginning.
Yeah,
okay.
We're in the works of planning an Act Two as we're talking. Act One and Act Two kind of grew simultaneously. Act Two has now taken a back seat as Act One has gotten even closer.
Okay.
But we're hoping possibly this fall, but within a year for Act Two.
So now let's get to that dance as a subject. What kinds of dance are we talking about? Is this modern dance?
Primarily modern dance, yes. One of the performances will be a combination of modern meets jazz with a little bit of like an African influence.
Okay.
So that might be, if you're a real dance person, one to look for, that'll be at Owen Park. But most of them are modern improvisation.
Now, see, modern dance, the term, has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
How long?
Right around the 1910s or so, 1920s, it really became popular.
So modern dance just keeps getting more modern, can we say that?
It kind of grew into a form of its own, really. There's contemporary dance, which is a confluence of modern and more ballet,
okay.
Which you might see a little bit of. It depends on what the artists are feeling at the festival, because so much of it is improvisational. But modern is really kind of anti-ballet in a way. It's trying to get lower to the ground, finding your center of gravity, and embracing the artistic side of it instead of the form side, mm-hmm, where you you're not looking for the dancer to look a particular way, but you're looking for them to be expressive in a certain way.
So even way, 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 way back in the 1910s, was it interpretive and spontaneous at that point? Is that why it was called modern?
It wasn't as spontaneous as you'll be seeing in the festival.
Okay.
A lot of that was rehearsed and planned material. But it was very expressive.
I keep wanting to put things in pigeonholes, and I apologize for that. But is modern dance just a thing, or are there different levels of modern dance? Are there different ways of doing modern dance?
There are definitely different ways. It's more of a family tree that it started with a few people, and then they trained a few people who developed their own theories and their own ways of doing it,
okay,
who then trained other people who took what they knew and developed it slightly differently. So you'll have Horton style, you'll have Graham style.
Horton style. These are named after people?
Yes.
Horton was an elephant, as far as I know. Wasn't he?
In Dr. Seuss, yeah.
Okay.
But you'll have it named after different people.
So there's going to be an Emerson limb on that tree eventually.
Here's hoping.
Okay. Emily Emerson with us. Eau Claire Dance Festival Act 1 is this Saturday. It's from 10 to 1 at various locations in downtown Eau Claire or near it. Emily, your configuration of the festival is a smart one because it combines dance with other art forms, thus nicely portraying its compatibility. Have you collaborated with other artists before?
The way that the dance program at St. Olaf, where I go to school, works, it's very collaborative. Even in intro to choreography, your final project is working with a composition student, and they have to compose a piece of music that you have to choreograph to, and you don't hear the final music until the day of the performance.
Oh, wow.
So it kind of came from that background where, because Olaf is such a music school, honestly, it's easier just to reach out to some of my music friends and say, hey, can you compose something, than it is for me to try to find the perfect song or the perfect soundscape. So I think part of the inspiration for that collaborative effort of the Eau Claire Dance Festival came from that background.
Musicians, you have a poet. Anybody else I'm missing that are going to be part of this?
That's all. Although for Act Two, we are hoping to include visual artists as well.
Now, what one envisions is a dancer interpreting what the other person is doing. The dancer is interpreting what, let's say, the musician is doing or the poet is reading. Is the musician and the poet expected to watch and see what they're doing as well, or is this all just a one-way street?
No, you totally hit it right on the head there. At least two of the locations where we have musicians and dancers paired together,
okay,
the idea is that the musicians are improvising and making it up on the spot, and the dancer is reacting to that. In turn, the musicians are reacting to how the dancer is moving and having that movement influence their sound. So it's kind of a duet of improvisation.
I know about spontaneity and improvisation in music. How does it happen when one is dancing? I'm especially interested in how a dancer interprets or reacts, for instance, to a poem.
It's partially improvisational. I gave the dancer phrases to work with, and the order that she presents the phrases are up to her, and that'll be spurred by what is going on with the poet and what the poet is saying. The poet also may take pauses in his performance, and the dancer might and might not, and all of this is just up to the moment of.
Mm.
In that sense, there is still a spontaneous nature to it.
Yeah, that's spontaneous with a capital S.
Sometimes modern dance can be set to silence or what we call a soundscape. So that would just be like noises in the background. We do actually have one performance in the festival that will be to a soundscape. That's the one at Phoenix Park, because there's already music being performed there that day. And the noise from the people, we didn't want to compete with that. So instead we embraced it. We're letting the environment create the music per se, even if it may not be music directly.
So you can dance to birds.
You could.
And car horns. I could keep coming up with a lot of those things. And one of the most exciting things I've found in doing this program is how many times artists, no matter what they're involved in, love to collaborate. I'm guessing that maybe an Emily Emerson out there is saying to herself, you know, there's a collaboration with an art form that I haven't even thought about. You think that's out there?
Oh, I hope it's out there. I hope that people are willing to come forward. And I've already gotten this from a few musicians where they've approached me saying, hey, this is what I do. This is what I create. Can this fit into your vision? And I'm so excited when I get messages like that, because even if it doesn't fit into, you know, act one or act two, I'm totally keeping it on the back burner. I will always need musicians, and I'm always excited to hear from those people.
So, having the horse here, let's get from the horse's mouth what Saturday is going to be all about. What are we going to see at these locations?
At each location, you will have at least one dancer, some type of sound, whether it's created by the environment, as we talked about in Phoenix Park, a poet, a single musician, or a group of musicians. And a lot of that dancing is either inspired by Eau Claire, if it's choreographed, or inspired by the space that it's being created in at the very moment.
It's at Volume 1 Gallery, State Theater Lobby, Eau Claire Farmers Market. That's at Phoenix Park. Baroque sculpture. Help me out on that.
That is near First Avenue and Grand, the end of Grand Avenue along the bike path.
By the river.
Right next to the river.
Okay. And then the Owen Park Band Show. Well, hey, good on you. coming up with the Eau Claire Dance Festival, Act 1, Emily Emerson.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that is good stuff. You're all done with the listening. If you want to read more, you could just Google Eau Claire Dance Festival and the Facebook page will come up and you can go there. Remember, 10 a.m., 1 p.m., Saturday. Spectrum West on WPR. To know what's on stage in Western Wisconsin, one calls on Jim Oliver. Let's do that.
The Red Barn Theater of Rice Lake will stage KOLD Radio Whitefish Bay through September 2nd. The Savannah Spring Sipping Society will be staged through Saturday by Enrichment Through Culture of Cumberland at the Cumberland Arts Center. The Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls will present The Children's Hour today, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater. The Eau Claire Children's Theater has scheduled auditions for the Rocky Horror Show at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Oxford Theater. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild has scheduled auditions for Wait Until Dark at 7 p.m. September 11th and 12th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. And the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls has scheduled auditions for Last Lists of My Mad Mother for 6:30 p.m. Monday, September 11th. There are roles for three women.
Yes, like the theatrician specializing in amateur and community, Jim Oliver has his fingers firmly on the strong pulse of Western Wisconsin. Let's get him back here for this week's Oliver Report.
Thanks, Al. Ann Sessions has been executive director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild since 2001. The Theater Guild is in the midst of its annual season ticket campaign these days, and Ann, of course, is in the middle of that important effort. She joins us to talk about the upcoming season and everything else about the theater that we can get her to share. Let's go to your personal involvement. What got you involved in theater administration?
My dad worked for the Guthrie Theater in set design, did a lot of tech. So he wasn't an actor. He did the other side of that. I guess that's kind of spurred my interest in the producing part of theater.
Have you ever acted or directed or any of that stuff?
Yeah, I'm not interested in being the actor. I would love to have more actors, but that's not something that's in my bucket list at all.
The purchase of what had been the Salvation Army building on Grand Avenue in 2005 gave the Theater Guild its own home. Where did it operate before that?
We had offices upstairs at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. But we really didn't have that other second venue, that place where we really could offer these smaller musicals and plays. So everything that we did We did at the State Theater and also at CARE Theater at the university.
Now, this is the 37th season
it is.
Of the Theater Guild. There have been some challenges that you faced in recent years with the building on Grand Avenue.
Yeah, anytime you own a building, there's always all those extra costs.
The roof got fixed and the lift is installed. I was in a couple of shows back however many years ago it was. I remember the actors would have to break out if someone came in a wheelchair and we'd have to help them up those horrible steps.
Yeah, they don't build, you know, they don't build those split levels buildings anymore like they used to. Mm-hmm. And it is still a challenge when we go to the State Theater. All the dressing rooms, someone are downstairs and there's no elevator there. So that's why the Confluence Arts Center will be a blessing.
Mm-hmm. I know that you're always looking for people to get involved. When I see cast lists, I see different people all the time, and yet some of the old-timers are still hanging around. How do you get involved in the Theater Guild?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. You can always call and get on our mailing list or go to our website to see what kind of auditions are coming up or other ways, because, you know, we're always looking for volunteers, both on the stage side for singers and dancers and actors, but also for people that work the backstage. Mm-hmm. The tech and the sound and the design and musicians. So we're always looking for people.
I would like to tell the story of an old friend of mine. He was a journeyman carpenter. And I remember he got involved in he had some personal problems. And so he got involved in theater building sets because he wanted something to do in the evenings to take his mind off his troubles. Before long, he was getting a couple of parts, walk-on parts and some musicals. And then pretty soon he had some walk-on parts and some dramas. And before he was done, he was directing high school plays in the area. So you can grow your way into the theater activity.
Right. You don't have to have previous experience to be involved in theater. Sometimes it's in people's bucket list. Sometimes it's something that they maybe had just briefly thought of. And sometimes people will bring somebody with them to auditions. And lo and behold, it's something that they really love.
Happened to me once. My boss brought me along to audition for a part in Harvey. I got to play the sanitary and orderly, and he didn't get a part. So it was interesting how that worked out. Anyway, we're talking to Ann Sessions, who is executive director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. Well, let's talk about the upcoming 37th season.
Sure. You know, we've got a combination of Broadway musicals. We're going to bring Sister Act. Sister Act hasn't been to Eau Claire yet, so we're going to bring that big musical. The nuns are already in rehearsal, and they sound fantastic. Mm-hmm. We also have some other musicals, including How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and that was just on Broadway. And we'll do Rodgers and Hammerstein's State Fair, which seemed like the right thing to do for the last season at the State, which is a nice family musical. And then we have a lot of great stuff at the Grand this year. We're going to do the female version of The Odd Couple, which is super fun. So instead of poker, you know, they're playing Trivial Pursuit. But it's still super fun. And we have Wait Until Dark, which is kind of this thriller comedy. If you're old enough, you remember the movie with Audrey Hepburn. Mm. We're doing a comedy out of order. We're going to bring Driving Miss Daisy here, too. And that's a lovely stage version. So it was staged in the beloved movie. But it's super fun. And then really, to celebrate this last season of the State Theater, we're going to do a Christmas Carol in December. So a great kind of holiday treat for people.
How do you see things changing once you move out of the State and into the new place?
We'll be able to do all the same kind of programming at the Grand, but those kind of bigger musicals will move from the State Theater to the Confluence. And the Confluence has, you know, a number of different venues, so we will fit, you know, the right show with the right venue. So I think it'll be pretty exciting. I do think that kind of like when we added the Grand, we were able to expand our programming. Mm-hmm. Same thing will happen with the Confluences. We'll be able to expand our programming also there, too.
Give me an example of what you mean by expanding the programming. I'm not as informed as a lot of people are as what facilities are going to be available at the Confluence.
Yeah, they have a large 1,200-seat theater. They'll have a 400 really flexible space. And I think it's there that the most kind of interesting shows will occur because you can do something, you know, proscenium, like what people normally think of, or you can do stuff in the round. You can do something so you can surround the world. So I think that you'll be able to just choose different productions that you're just not able to do at the State Theater where you sit quite a ways away from the stage.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing that's somewhat always bothered me about the stage is the fact that everybody is mic'd, and so if you get down too close, the sound comes at you from the side, and you're not exactly sure who's talking on stage.
Sure. I mean, that's a vaudeville stage, mm-hmm. you know, and now we're using it for other purposes, so mm-hmm. the sound is always going to be a little bit different wherever you sit.
What challenges do you see ahead let's start with the Grand. Is anything going to change at the Grand with the new situation, or is that going to be pretty much the same?
Yeah, we're always looking to upgrade lighting and the stage. There's always things that we're looking at doing and expanding. You know, we spent all summer long doing programming for children this year. We had 200 kids all summer long, so it's a nice thing. The biggest challenge always for nonprofits, fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fact of life. You're just not going to charge high prices for tickets because you want to make sure that everybody can afford to go to see mm-hmm. a play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is that people complain because the prices start creeping up. But at some point, you know, the outside money has to come in and help the situation. Now, how do you see governmental assistance? Do you think there's a threat to governmental assistance to the arts, or is it going to stay fairly consistent?
Well, in the state of Wisconsin, we're number 48, so we already have almost the lowest amount of participation in arts funding in the nation. So it would be great if that would increase somewhere even close to where Minnesota is. They are one of the top states. So there aren't as many grant monies available in this state as there are in some other places, too. But it definitely has an effect, because then you really do need to look for dollars somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Being a native of Minnesota, I know a little bit about how that kind of works over there. And so much of it is just there is so much theater. And the thing that bothers me about that, I guess, is that there is so much theater around here. So why are we behind?
It's just this a philosophy difference, you know, mm-hmm. because as you can tell, there's a lot of arts in Eau Claire. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of talent and a lot of things to share, mm-hmm. and it's important that everybody be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking to Ann Sessions, who is executive director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. The Guild is in the midst of its annual season ticket campaign for its 37th season. For season ticket information or general information about the theater, you can call 715-832-PLAY or go to the Guild's site on the internet at www.cvtg.org. And thanks so much for coming to talk to us.
And thank you.
Jim Oliver on Spectrum West. We're coming up next. The State Theater hosts one last season. Support for WPR comes from Visit Winona, offering Shakespeare to bike trails to bluegrass. The city has a wide assortment of entertainment options, a trip planner, and events calendar available at visitwinona.com. Well, Ann Sessions alluded to it, and it's on everyone's mind, the final season of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, the State Theater, as its signature setting. And who better to provide a look ahead and a look back than the gentleman who's been leading an uphill charge for a decade now, Mr. Ben Richgruber. I need to hear about your perspective on this. What's going through your head?
It's a good mix of things this season. We've got some new stuff, some old stuff, some favorite stuff, just kind of a tribute to what's been going on there for a long time. And it is exciting. You know, we get to move into Confluence the next year, but we're going to take this year to celebrate the state. And one show that really does that is the Peacherine Ragtime Orchestra. They play soundtracks to movies. So we're going to show three silent films that night, Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, and Harold Lloyd, and the orchestra is going to do a live soundtrack to them. which is a total throwback to the vaudeville days when the State Theater opened. That's exactly what was on the stage there.
1926.
1926 is when it opened up.
Other than that show, has there been special treatment to this season because of its special nature?
Well, we've really worked hard to grab as many shows as we can that are coming through touring. We've worked with promoters to really bring in some of the names that everybody likes. We've got a good lineup of them here and some more to be announced very soon.
Before we get to the specifics of the season itself, I'd like to hear about Ben Richgerber's personal emotions as new beginnings are approaching. Has the State Theater and its surroundings taken on a bit of a different sentiment now that there is a light at the end of the tunnel? The light being the confluence down the street, obviously. I mean, it's one thing to criticize the old lady when there's no other alternative. But it's been 31 years since she had a facelift.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you're seeing her in any softer light now that she's ending her tenure as the only show in town. You don't cuss at that draft coming through the attic. You kind of say, well, that's her. So how's it going through your head? Because you've been there a while.
I've been there for 10 years now. This fall marks my 10th anniversary. I've seen quite a bit. And yeah, those early days, it was all about patching this and duct taping that, and it still is. We're using it for another season. So she's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yes, there is a little bit of nostalgia that's starting to creep in, but also being there every day, the roof still leaks, the boiler is troublesome. The artists in our community are amazing, and they deserve the confluence. If everyone's been able to really grow and do great things in the state, they're ready for a little bit more.
One other line I was going to add at the end of my diatribe there is to say, not so bad after all, huh, Ben? Do we know the future of the state?
We are going to sell. It's a really important piece of property, both physically and just location. It's a great spot downtown. So we want it to become something. I think there's opportunity for a next life that is not a theater. You could do a lot of things in it if you just start imagining it as a big box and not as a theater specifically.
Are historical society types interested?
Oh, yeah. We've received phone calls from all kinds of people with different ideas and what ifs and how abouts. And then we've had, you know, some of the more prominent developers in town walk through to see what they could do with the space as well. So we're going to use it for another season and then we're going to sell it. And hopefully it will be a very complementary use to the Confluence.
Okay, another season we're talking about is the 2017-2018 season. It appears as if it begins with some country music on the 15th of September. Who's that coming?
It does. We've got quite a bit of country coming through. Restless Heart is going to be kicking things off, and then John Anderson will be in as well. So we've got some good country names. Eau Claire loves that.
You also had a late addition. I mean, we're going to go down the line here a little bit. September, October, November, December. We can't talk forever. But you had an addition, a backstage thing on the 25th of September.
Yes, Caliphone is a fantastic group, and they will be performing along with Shane Leonard, who's a great local musician. So that's kind of a kickoff for our backstage concert series, which is always fun. The audience is on stage with the performers. We close the curtain there, and it's more of a nightclub feel.
That's fun. I've been to some of those.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
We'll have a few more of those being announced as the season rolls on here.
Good. And regular inhabitants are going to be part of, as you would imagine, the 2017-2018 season. People like the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, the Jazz Orchestra, the Symphony Orchestra. Am I missing
anybody? Yeah, you bet. All those great local organizations. The State Theater has been their home, and that's really allowed them to create successful businesses and great experiences for the people that are involved with them. So, yeah, the Children's Theater has a full lineup. The Jazz Orchestra and Theater Guild are in there, the Symphony. And they've all really taking a look at this being their last season at the state as well. So the Theater Guild has a performance of A Christmas Carol, which they do every few years. So they're excited to do that one more time here at the State Theater. And the Jazz Orchestra is bringing back a lot of favorites and doing some fun things to celebrate this last season as well, including a cool backstage concert. They had such a good time. Was it 2 years ago? They'd had a funk concert, and the band had such a great time. They're doing that again this year as a special event backstage.
Oh, good. That same weekend, you have Restless Heart. The next night, you have
The Beatles are coming back.
Yes,
yeah, the 1964 is a tribute, and they were here last year, and that night we went ahead and confirmed a date for this year.
Mary Chapin Carpenter. Now, I had an interview set up with her last time she was coming to town, and that never got pulled off. Something came up. It was right at the last minute, and I still have my notes from that interview, so I might be able to use them again.
You've done your homework.
She's coming October 12th, yes?
Yes. Yep. Again, that was another good one that happened, and we happened to get a good route. She enjoyed Eau Claire, and we enjoyed her, so that'll be another fun night of music.
What is My Father's Dragon?
My Father's Dragon is the first show in our family series this year.
Okay.
So we have three performances that are part of our family series, and they're all on Saturdays, both a matinee and evening show. So depending on the age of your kiddos, there's an opportunity to come out and have a good time with those. So My Father's Dragon is a fantastic children's book, and it will come to life on stage with puppets and masks, and it's just the story of a boy and his unlikely friendship with a dragon.
Oh, how nice.
Aren't all good children's books unlikely friendships?
And they lived happily ever after?
Yeah, we should have more of those friendships.
They used to, anyway. Ben Rich Gerber in the studio with us, Executive Director, Eau Claire Regional Arts Council Center, et cetera, et cetera. We're looking at this upcoming season, which turns out to be pretty special because it's the last one performed and enjoyed at the wonderful State Theater. Marshall Tucker Band.
Marshall Tucker
Late
Band.
Late October.
Yes, that's another one. Again, classics. You know, these guys are very well known, and we're excited to have them in there. And on top of that, too, the Mavericks are going to be in town in October.
Yeah.
Late September, whenever that one rolls in. So that was another late addition after we went to print with the brochure. That's why we stopped calling it a brochure and just started calling it a season preview.
Sure.
We keep adding things, yeah. And it changes.
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain. This is a Prince tribute, as you might guess.
You would guess. Black Jacket Symphony.
Yes.
Who are they?
The Black Jacket Symphony is a group, and they do lots of different tributes. And we went ahead and booked the Prince one this November, obviously to pay our respects and tribute to the great musician we lost. That'll be a really good night.
And Lori Line, she comes back.
Lori Line comes back every year, and it is the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So
the 25th.
Yes, the 25th. So that's how I know when Thanksgiving is. It's always 2 days before Lori Line.
You seem to have become buddies with the Moscow Ballet, too.
They sort of disappeared from Eau Claire for a while, and now we've had them back a few years in a row, so we'll have the Nutcracker back this year. And they're already asking for dates in Confluence, so they're going to continue to be good friends here to Eau Claire.
I'm trying to come up with songs that a Motown Christmas might include, other than the standards done in Motown fashion.
Yes, it's all your Motown favorites with some Jingle Bells on the side. The Motown crew came through last year, and that's not a concert we'd had in a while, a Motown thing. So we went ahead and grabbed it back. Tickets are selling fast for that one, too.
Tonic Sofa.
Champions.
What would that be like?
I know. What would a year be like without Tonic? They're such good friends now. I mean, they've been coming to Eau Claire for, 15 years or more. This is like another home for them. They know a lot of people in town, and it's a really good chance for them to come and just visit. And that's one of the best parts with a lot of these return guests of ours is they really get to know the town and the people. So it's not just come in, do a show, disappear. They really enjoy getting to know everybody and build those relationships.
And as if that weren't enough, Christmas isn't over yet. You have a Kodachrome Christmas.
Kodachrome Christmas. Yes,
wow.
This is a one-man show. It's a great little spoof. It's actually a man playing a woman who does a public access television show, and she's doing her Christmas special. Madcap comedy throughout, and that'll be three nights that'll be in town. So.
That's just before Christmas.
That is just before Christmas, and that features
mood.
John McGivern, who is a Wisconsinite, and you might recognize from his public television show.
I do remember that name. I wonder if he knows who I am.
I'm sure he does.
Probably not.
Public television, public radio, you guys get along.
Yeah, we do. Squirrel Nut Zippers. See, I brought them up earlier only because I think that's such a great name. I can't get too far into 2018 because, as I said, we don't have much time, but I wouldn't end this program without Squirrel Nut Zippers. Tell me about them.
Squirrel Nut Zippers that's probably the highlight of my season right now. That's the one I'm looking forward to. About 20, 25 years ago, Squirrel Nut Zippers came out with their first album. You may remember that swing was really big for a few years.
Yes, the big band
sound came back, and Squirrel Nut Zippers were one of the big groups of that era. So they're celebrating the 25th anniversary of their album Hot, which was their hottest album.
Cool.
So they decided to get together and hit the road again. So that was a band that I listened to at the time, and I am just absolutely excited to have them come through town.
And as I said, we can't talk about everything in the season, but you can go online or pick up a brochure, which probably has some Post-it notes added to it now, because as you said, there's things that have been added.
I take them all off the shelf and scribble in them to make the new additions.
Just run all over town?
I do.
Good. Well, good for you. You also have something going on whereby people can share their memories of the State Theater.
Yes.
Tell
because
us about
this
that. That's important stuff.
It is. We've been focusing on Confluence for the last 5 years.
Yes.
But it is time to celebrate the state. This is our last season there, and we don't just want to run away and pretend it never happened. This is a very special building for the community and so many people in it. So we want to hear those stories. If you've got a great memory of the State Theater, put it on our Facebook page or shoot us an email at info@eauclairearts.com. And we want to hear those stories, and we're going to share those throughout the season.
I've known people other than you, although you've been the highlight, who have run old theaters. And what happens when they renovate old theaters is they find old things.
Yes.
Did anybody over the years find mementos in the State Theater? And if so, have those been preserved?
Yeah, we've got some bits and pieces. A lot of them are old whiskey bottles, so the construction crew was having a good time. Or maybe the projectionist. But yeah, we found little trinkets. It was a movie theater for a long time,
yeah.
So we've got a little candy box that was found between some seats. Just lots of neat little things like that picked up as we start cleaning different areas or finding different spots or renovating things.
Ben Rich Gruber, thanks for coming in. We're looking forward to this season. We're going to patronize the State Theater in ways that you could never imagine because it's the last year. Is there a last performance at the State Theater that will be something bigger than we can imagine? Last thing on the stage?
Yeah, we are kind of talking about what that might be and
okay.
what the timing is. Confluence is set to open in the fall of 18,
yes.
So August it should be done. So we'll be aiming for that. But, you know, we're keeping an eye on the construction timeline, so we make sure that there is a full season planned and everything's ready to move over there when it needs to. So, yeah, we're toying with some ideas and everyone's kind of brainstorming of what that fun celebration might be and how we're going to say goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's been a lot of who would be the first show at the Confluence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there should be just as much chatter as who would be the last show.
There is, and we've had quite a bit of that.
See, you're way ahead of me as usual.
It's my job, man.
Why can't I come up with anything fresh when Ben's in the studio? I don't know. Ben, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. All the details on the season are at the website eauclairearts.com. Now, on the subject of Ben Richgruber, in my opinion, he's one of the good, smart people who helped us find a place where we could be healthy enough and happy enough and able enough to consider ascending to a new level. And he did it all while capably and efficiently directing a facility that could be viewed as anything but an optimistic vantage point. He helped cobble and patch and mend during times when a city's conventional, predictable side won most of the debates with its progressive, creative one. But here we are today watching the future of the arts literally under construction, and Ben is one of the people to thank for helping us see the possible, believe it, find a way, and then take it. Personally, I'd like to have Ben Richgruber as a guest on this program talking about marvelous ways we enrich and entertain ourselves for years to come. Here's a Spectrum memo. Quickly, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series winding down. Just a couple dates left. Tonight, it's Tropo Big Band plus Klezmazel Mano. I think I've just butchered that. With Haley Parvin. The final Tuesday night blues event at Owen Park in Eau Claire is next Tuesday, featuring the Joy Ann Parker Band. That starts at 6:30. Lots of stuff going on, and we'll provide Spectrum memoranda for you as often as we can. That's Spectrum West for this week, folks. Thanks to the Becca, Kate, and Dean machine. And thank you for being a great audience. Still working on what's up for next week. We have at least a couple musical segments planned, so don't miss it. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thanks, and see you then.